Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. It's April 25, 2022. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Karen Stevenson. Welcome, Karen. I'm so delighted to have you with me.
I'm glad to be here.
Well, you've listened to some of these, so you kind of know the drill. And we start at the very beginning. I must admit that I don't know very much about you, so I'm excited to learn more. Tell us, where were you born?
I was born in Corvallis, Oregon, which is where I am also living now and talking to you from.
And we'll find out as we go along if she's ever left Corvallis, and if so, where she went. Is it safe to say that Corvallis was kind of a home area for your parents?
No. My mom was born in Scotland and my dad was born in Canada. They came here because dad was an aquatic entomologist and had a job at Oregon State University as a professor.
Do you know how your parents met?
Yes. Actually, during the pandemic, I have been living with my mom, so we have had a lot of time to talk and get to know each other much better than we had. Mom was traveling and working at a research station in Canada where dad was working, so that's how they met.
How many siblings do you have, and where do you fit in the family?
I am the youngest. I have three siblings. My oldest brother and sister are 8 years older than me and are twins. And then there is Susan Frisbee, who is 4 years older than me. She is how I came to know the Portland Mennonite Church.
And we'll get to that a bit later as well. Twins. Do twins run in the family? Do you know?
No. They're the only twins I know in the family, and they actually were a surprise that mom did not know she was having twins until Richard was born, and the nurse said, you're not done.
Wow. Tell me about growing up in Corvallis. Now, as we all know, that's a university town. So I think there's kind of some unique characteristics sometimes about those kinds of areas. Tell me about growing up there.
Connected with the university, what I remember most from childhood was that my dad would periodically go on sabbatical. So memories from childhood, the strong ones are when we were not living in Corvallis. That we went to England for a year when I was three. And then when I was in sixth grade, we lived in New Zealand for 6 months.
Do you remember anything at all about that time in England when you were three?
That is where I have my first memories. Many of those memories are from photographs and stories, but I do remember once my first memory was one of my peers in nursery school who was crying, and it wasn't something anyone would have told me. Just but we lived in a thatched cottage, and my mom writes children's books, so she wrote a novel set in that cottage. I also remember that it was at the top of a very steep hill, especially from the point of view of a three-year-old. I went to nursery school there, and it was a taxi that took me to the school, but we had to walk up the hill at the end, which worked much better during blackberry season when there would be reason to stop. There were also, during that time, power cuts because of the coal miners going on strikes. And when the power was out, there was no nursery school. So that was when mom entertained both of us by teaching me how to read. So I learned how to read at a very early age.
What is the name of this book that your mother wrote?
That book is called To Know Where I'm Back. And it's a time slip fantasy. She's written a lot of other books as well. And actually, she and I have written some books together as well. But that comes later in the story. That was not when I was four.
But you remember, that's when things got started for you, it sounds like. Any memories from that time in New Zealand?
I loved New Zealand. It was a wonderful, wonderful 6 months. I think partly because when I was in New Zealand, all my differences were because I was foreign and unique, whereas here in my regular school life, my differences were just because I was weird. I did do what every American child in a British Commonwealth country does and try to pass off my spelling as American spelling. But actually, both of my daughters I ended up naming after girls who I met in my sixth grade class. So I loved it that much.
Have you been back since?
I have not been back since. I have not had the opportunities to travel as an adult that I would have liked. Life does that sometimes.
So it sounds like when you were here in the States, you were in public school?
Yeah.
And it sounds like there were some challenges. Can you tell us what maybe one or two of those might have been?
I think I was a very smart, very creative, somewhat quirky kid, and my peers did not necessarily appreciate smart, quirky kids. frankly, that's so.
So as you were getting older and into, say, junior high and high school, what subjects were you finding really fascinating and wonderful?
I found a lot of subjects fascinating and wonderful. I liked school and I liked learning, which was another thing that did not necessarily go well with one's peers. I really liked science and nature. I did a biology science project studying wasps that make the tree galls, and spent the summer working in the lab. And that project got national honors for the Westinghouse Science Talent Search. I really enjoyed both science and also writing and creativity and storytelling.
And those two don't necessarily always go together, do they?
I think of them as going together. But yeah, I think that,
you know, yeah. We have English majors and we have science majors. And sometimes those are pretty separate things, but right. they got combined for you.
Yeah.
Since your father was working at the university, is it safe to say that after you graduated from high school, you would go somewhere to college?
Yeah, I went to Reed.
And how did that come about?
Well, my older brother went to Reed, and I applied early decision, so it was the only college I applied to.
When you got to Reed, I mean, at some point when you go to college, you have to declare a major. When did that happen, and what did you decide?
When I was at Reed, I pretty much, I went in with the intention of being a biology major. And I alternated between biology and anything but biology, but always ended up back at biology.
So that's what you actually ended up with, was Bachelor of Science?
Bachelor of Arts from Reed. So once again, that fits that creativity and science all mixing together.
So and Bachelor of Arts in biology.
Yeah, and my focus was more on the ecology side than the pre-med, which was the other thing that people in biology did.
Did you have any idea what you wanted to do with this degree or after you graduated?
Well, I grew up in Corvallis, so I just kind of thought that people grew up and became professors. And that was not the path that I ended up doing. Frankly, I still don't know what I'm doing when I grow up. That's still a mystery.
So what did you actually end up doing?
As I say, that is still a work in progress. I did meet someone at Reed, got married, had kids, got divorced. And I have done a whole variety of different jobs. As I said, I've written some science children's books. Mom and I worked together and did a number of nature activity books, which were really fun to write. Back in the days when people went to national parks, a lot of the marketing was done through national parks. But basically taking accurate science and activities to make it fully engaging. And then wrote a couple also biographies.
So say more about your writing and maybe your process and how you decide what you want to write about.
With the nonfiction, one of the things that makes that work well is in those ones, the publisher would say, hey, we want a book about this. Do this and research it and we'll work together. I've also been working on a fiction novel that has been in progress for about 10 years now. That's more challenging because you have to write it and then find a market for it. So with the ones that I wrote, you were talking with the publisher beforehand and then working on it.
How did you find a publisher?
Well, the connections with Mom. That was long enough ago that the entire writing world has changed so much. Yeah. Luck and connections is how you get through life, I think.
Is it safe to say that you enjoy doing research?
I love doing research. I am absolutely happy if I am in a library and finding things out and discovering things.
And that was the next question. Where do you actually do your research and how? I mean, and has it changed over the years?
Yeah. I don't think I can even describe that process. Just...
Do you like to do, I guess, what I would call hands-on? You want to go to a library and pull out a book, or has much of that changed to being online these days? And is there a difference?
I love the physical library. The smell of the books, the artwork on the walls. I think that really being places is important, I say, after 2 years of being at home.
Going back to sort of your growing up years, was church a part of growing up for you?
Yes, I grew up in the Presbyterian church, and church was a very central part of growing up. The element of the different generations together. And it was very much a place where I knew people and people knew me. It was one of those situations where social rules in school of people you would interact with were different. And so that was where I met a lot of people I knew. The church I went to also had a preschool. So as a kid, that was where I met many of my friends that way. I remember I absolutely loved when we would have a chance to be exploring the building. So many fond memories of youth group activities where we were playing sardines. I don't know if you're familiar with that game.
No, what is it?
It's kind of like hide and seek, except one person hides. And then everyone who's looking for them goes, and when you find the person, you crawl in and hide with them. So that is just a huge memory of evenings exploring the church building and finding the locations behind the stage. Just all the back corners and really getting to know and be familiar with the place and people. So...
And would your whole family go to church?
Yeah. we'd go, and then the youth groups in the evening, and there would be certainly ages in like the teenage years when I would go and help out in the nursery. But I think that kind of opportunity to find where people fit at different ages is so important. I was also in the handbell choir. So I played handbells, and we went a couple of years to different handbell conferences where everyone would be playing. You'd learn the same songs, and then there'd be a mass choir of several hundred choirs, all like filling a college gym kind of space, all playing together. And that was fun. Of course, we thought we were so good, and then we discovered.
You maybe heard some others that were a little better.
Yeah, discovered the people who could play an entire solo, you know, but it was fun.
So at some point you found Portland Mennonite. You said it had something to do with your sister, Susan Frisbee. Tell us that story.
Well, the first thing I will say is that for me, 2019 was a worse year than 2020.
Can you say more?
I won't say a whole lot, just because at some point we as a culture get so interested in focusing on the bad things. But yeah, it was tough. In the beginning of the year, I was assaulted and was going through that. And then, unfortunately, my church that I was going to, instead of being a supportive environment, perhaps the way to explain it is the minister was so uncomfortable with the pain I was going through, she basically pushed me out of the church, which meant that I was going through one terrible thing and then the terrible thing of not being supportive by people you really thought should be there for you. And so I was just in a stage of really trying to rebuild and move on. And then the pandemic hit, which, you know, in some ways turned out to be a blessing because it just gave me time and space to slow down. And it gave me the opportunity, you know, once churches were online, that's how I ended up connecting with Portland Mennonite, which was a church that I had known about because I visited with Susan and Barry and, you know, over the various years, and certainly know that they've talked very much about their experiences with the church. And so I already had some connection, and then being online, just a wonderful place to show up at a time when I really needed community. And so then that leads to the interesting questions of how, now that I really am connected and have the online experiences, figuring out how we move out of the pandemic is an interesting challenge.
Can you say a bit of what you found helpful or whatever word about Portland Mennonite? Was there some aspect that you can point to? Or
a very welcoming community. I think the value of community comes through even throughout the time of not being physically close. The work that the church put into maintaining itself as connected people. I really enjoyed the craft exchange and the various ways to be fostering individual connections throughout. And yeah, certainly the values and the services.
Was the concept of pacifism something that you had ever spent any time with before, or is that one of the features that you like?
concept of pacifism is important. Actually, my grandfather was a conscientious objector in Scotland in World War II. Yeah. And, you know, that's something that I sort of knew growing up, but come to understand how deeply unique that was about him. So he was a Presbyterian minister, and the other two ministers in his town both joined up as chaplains. And even as a minister, he still got flack for having not joined up. You know, it was a combination also, and my mom met someone a long time afterwards who really did give voice to, he kept the town together. He would go and preach at each church on a different week.
Because their pastors were gone.
Right. So, you know, he really did serve that role. But even then, there was a tension. And that was, I just really, the more I think about that, just am amazed by those values in my roots.
And does it feel good to be able to say, yes, I agree with that?
Very much so.
So you've said that you haven't had a whole lot of opportunity to travel, but if you could go somewhere and time and money and there were no obstacles in your way, is there some place that you would like to go, either go back to or go to, and why?
I'm going to kind of dodge that question and go around in a different way and talk about what my experiences have been of staying in place. Because I think that there's an important question, and travel, I absolutely value it. One of the things, you know, and I have in recent decades prioritized my children having the opportunity to travel. But there's an element of you can go somewhere and still never leave. It's like you can have the, there's an element of traveling as seeing and discovering and really seeing new things, which partly this is something I've come to from not having the finances and opportunity to do it. But the question of can you bring that curiosity of the world to your familiar place? Can you be in the town where you've lived for 50 plus years and discover something new in it? So it's been very interesting for me as the pandemic has unfolded. I mean, I cannot say that I'm in a bad place. Like, if one had to be isolated in a house for 2 years, we're just outside Corvallis. So we have a view of a hillside, deer peering in the window on a regular basis. But just the degree to which I have spent these past 2+ years really watching the seasons progress outside the window has been quite amazing. Now, where the daffodils are just passing for the third season. So there's something quite amazing about having really connected to this small patch outside this window that I would not have expected. And I think that is an element of travel. I begin to think in terms of thinking about travel, you know, that question of how much an airplane requires of energy in the world. And maybe having had the experiences, I definitely value experiences, and I definitely think that it's important for everybody to go to different places, different cultures, experience them. I'm glad to have had my travel being in ways of living in a location and getting to settle in and see them. Another very, very important experience with travel that I had was after I finished my undergraduate degree, I went to Managua, Nicaragua for 3 months and went on a trip. It was originally a reforestation project. So it was a volunteer opportunity working with a Nicaraguan grassroots organization. And I learned, the first lesson I learned through that was that things don't go according to plan. So the challenges that they had, this was in Nicaragua in 1990. And so they basically had an area they wanted to do the reforestation project, but the physical proof of title to the land was not available because of their war situation. And so I ended up working in a forest seed bank. Basically, the group I was with was placing me there so that they could build connections for the future. So that was a eye-opening experience. I remember at one point, one of my coworkers dropped a beaker, so broke a glass beaker. And they basically taped it together so as to use for to measure dry ingredients. It was a different, yeah, it was a real challenging experience for me. The only person who was available as a cultural interpreter, so the only American in the organization I was with, I showed up and met him and got oriented, and then he said, oh, I'm going on my honeymoon and leaving for the next 6 months. So I was completely there without anyone to translate culturally for me, which was a challenge. I also discovered quite quickly that traveling alone is for extroverts, not introverts. If you're an introvert, it really helps to bring someone you know with you. I got to a point where I decided that the things that were important were to do good work when I was there, whatever I was asked to do my best at, to be safe, and to catch the airplane to get home. And everything else was, yeah, it was an amazing experience. And the experience of being the person who was who looked different. And yeah, that was a very eye-opening experience. When I went, I had studied Spanish in school, but I had never, until I was on the airplane going to Nicaragua, spoken Spanish to somebody who did not also speak English. So that was...
But it's interesting to me that you can still come out of that and say that this was an amazing experience.
It was an amazing experience.
Well, Karen, there are obviously many more things that you could tell us about your amazing life, but thank you so much for giving us just this little glimpse.
Yes.
And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. If something you heard raised questions or you discovered a connection, take the opportunity to reach out and continue the conversation. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.